Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, another, I hope, very great show dealing with metaphysics, and that's going to be a pretty significant focus, and also certainly spiritual issues and how the development of sense and the unified one is the critical factor in returning us to a more soul-like state and eventually to move from what is the human kingdom to a higher kingdom, sometimes referred to as the kingdom of souls. And we'll talk more about that, of course. I think that tonight's show will be definitely more on the scientific side. Now, some people like that and some people don't. I'll try to make it as easy as possible, but the reason it needs to be on that side is that I'm going to explain cause, why things are the way they are. And for a lot of people, the resistance to developing a unified sense is an emotional one. There's a lot of sometimes unpleasant factors that come into play when someone decides that they are going to work on that part of themselves. And they need a more causal, in my opinion, most people need a more causal or more, we'll call it higher mental understanding of why that is so important to maybe overcome their own resistances. Because if they don't have that, they make up a lot of excuses, even though that they hear it from all various sources, and that can include anyone from a spiritual teacher to a book that they've read to maybe a whole bunch of people who have actually been somewhat successful with it. In any case, those sources tell them they need to do it, but they don't have a clear concept of why. And that's why I'm going to rely upon a conceptual viewpoint, at least in the beginning, so that there will be a another means for someone to overcome the resistance. So let's talk about some physics. It's not going to be about sense yet. I'm going to just begin the show talking about some of the physics of our universe that's metaphysics, meaning it's beyond the present level of understanding in physics and has yet to have a significant enough evidence of proof to for some people for it to be considered regular physics. Meta means beyond, means greater than. Okay, so if in our looking at this, some people might say, well, it's really not metaphysics because it's really mostly physics with a little twist here and there. That's okay, that's true. But those twists for a traditional physicist are a big leap from where they usually think. So, at any rate, let's talk about how the universe is constructed. And in basic terms, what we think of as things, particles and waves and everything that's constructed from them, comes from the thought and the construction of that thought of God or our Creator. Now, you can say, well, where's the proof of that? Well, that's why this show exists, right? Why like this? The main point of it is that I'm not going to try to prove that tonight because this is a whole different subject. But let's just say it originates there. And in originating in that respect, a mind is different than just thought. You should be aware of that. A mind is inclusive of the genesis of all that is, and it goes beyond thinking. It is partly thought, though. So we should not ignore that fact. But it goes beyond that. And the two interacting together, the thought with the actualization of the thought, in our case we call it activity, is what produces the eventual goal, we'll say, of the Creator to produce what we call life. And in its purpose, the life has to have its own ability to be creative of itself, as God was, and creative of many other elements that it is able to in some way alter or improve on, hopefully, but or at least in some way make a change to. So if we look at this process, this is the premise of how the universe was initially constructed. And then from that point, there's an interaction between the two parts of God's mind that make thought. And those two parts are referred to as creation, purpose. That's the first part, is creation, purpose, choices, will, etc. There's numerous words because not any one of them can define such a huge, huge concept as the first part of God's mind. And the second part of God's mind then is the direction of the choices, a direction, we'll call it, of the purpose. And the direction, it could also be called the inclusiveness of it, or the, another way of looking at it is the expression of universal love, or the planning of it. All of those words come into the second part, which also is referred to as consciousness. So you join the second part with the first part, and you actually end up with whole thought. Choices without direction that don't limit the entire field that the choices exist within is not a thought. Thoughts always have some limitation on the field in which they are from within their choices making them. So if there's no effect on the field, it doesn't isn't thought in a definition using what is known as a quantum field type of analysis. It's a little difficult to understand some of this stuff, and that's the reason there's a textbook I wrote on it that goes into much greater detail. But at any rate, if we look at how the universe is constructed, therefore, you have thought, and then you have intelligent activity, which is the third part of God's mind. And when the activity is anything other than perfectly intelligent, meaning that there's perfect communication, there is complete intelligence to the interaction, meaning that the two sources or more that the interaction is taking place with have a completely cooperative, completely helpful, and a completely, we'll call it, unselfish way of relating. That makes sense to most of us, so we could really understand that part easier than we can the first two parts. And but when all three of those are manifested, things that are created from it become godlike. So they aren't necessarily initially God. They are godlike in that they represent the three different parts of God's mind, maybe in unique ways, and beyond where God started in terms of the creation of the universe, because the whole purpose of this is for something new to be added. It isn't like, oh, God did it and it's done and that's it. I know some people think of God that way, a deterministic universe, a deterministic God. But the God that I'm describing is quite the opposite. The God I'm describing is neither deterministic, nor is it seeking to interfere with the will of the life that it helped initially to create. All right, so when we see how that all works together, there is a unique thing that takes place. Every time that the thought is involved in some activity, which is close to the way that God thinks, there is a sympathetic, we'll call it, vibration that is in accord with God. And what comes out of that result is a state of, we'll say, similarity to the Creator in whatever life is involved in the creation. The reverse is true. If the life moves in a direction with its thought and in a manner of interacting that is less than perfect, intelligent, we'll call it, the result is that the level of, we'll call it, level of closeness to God's thought is reduced significantly, and the subsequent vibration that comes from this produces a separation of time from space and the formation of what we refer to as energy. What it really is, by the way, in a physics sense, is that the perfect vibration of God is disturbed. And the disturbance of this vibration leads to a disharmony and force, and the force manifests as some form of energy. And the energy also, when it slows down or is becoming disharmonious with other energy, particleizes and becomes various kinds of different versions of form. Now, all of these things in terms of physics would be referred to as a frequency, and there is a direction to the frequency, so we call that a phase. And then there is another part that has to do with the perception of the frequency and the phase, along with a third thing which is unique, and that is called dimensionality to the energy. So the energy starts developing dimensionality, and that part leads to a sense when we can sense it through some part or form ourselves of intensity. So now we have intensity becoming of the perception of the results of all these interactions. You might say, whoa, that's way out there in concepts that are very physics-like stuff. Well, it is. But I'll try to make it a little easier as we go along. I'm putting it together right now in purely conceptual form. And the reason for it is you can go back and listen to it. It'll make more sense after you listen to the rest of the show. So I've sort of put it in the beginning of the show so that that's when people's minds are the freshest. And they may grasp more of it now than they would later. Plus, later they can go back and re-listen and say, oh, now I understand what he was talking about. All right, so there we have this really, really physics type of expression. I'm going to put it a whole different way now, where the creator or God has a mind that produces a certain type of multidimensional vibration. Now, what the heck does that mean? Well, it has to do a lot with string theory in a weird way, if you're into physics. But what it means is there's a dimensional part to this element of frequency and phase that changes the nature of the frequencies and phase by adding additional or subtracting dimensions to the quote-unquote expression of God's mind. God's mind is actually expressed in seven major dimensions. Some people will refer to it as 49 total subdimensions, but because each dimension could be divided up into seven parts, but and sometimes even more than that. But there are seven major dimensions, and each dimension is, as we move away from the source, which is God, each dimension is less an accurate expression of God's mind. It is the thought is not as complete, so the choices or purpose along with the consciousness or direction or love is not as complete. That makes the thought, and the interactions that beings have are not as complete. So the result is you have an incompleteness. The incompleteness has to do with the subtraction of dimensionality in the vibrational expression of God's mind. And another way to put it is that the completeness of the string that has seven parts to it is diminished by each dimension that is missing. So the vibration of the string has seven equal vibrations, but they are equal only in the sense that each has a special place to play in terms of interaction. However, the highest vibration has within it all the lower ones, and the lower ones are only subtractions from that, and therefore don't have major parts of the higher one, but they have subparts of it. So it's a little bit confusing, but and there's actually that part is easier to understand when you do it mathematically. It actually, most people would understand it better in a mathematical formula about that specific thing I just said. But regardless, so you have this really strange kind of universe that is designed to isolate, there's an isolation factor, to isolate parts of the creator's mind from certain parts of life so the life could be free. Otherwise, God's mind would overpower the expressions of life as you move into lower dimensions of time and space, and life would no longer be free. And so God created an amazing universe by coming up with this great grand physics, somewhat based on quantum field theory, which is a little hard for some people to grasp, and it's not well understood even by physicists these days. But nonetheless, it has elements of string theory, and it has a lot of stuff in it that some physicists would say, yeah, I kind of understand what this guy's talking about now, finally. You know, and so ultimately, the purpose of God in making this universe this kind of, we'll say, unusual design, is to keep freedom alive, and also to make sure that there is a propensity towards making freedom connected to consciousness. So, or creativity connected to consciousness, make it easier for humans to understand it. Creativity connected to consciousness. And when we see creativity connected to consciousness, that's the more normal state, even in the lowest dimensions where we physically live right now. Although it's less obvious as you move from the higher dimensions to the lower, because the ability to sense the things I'm telling you about is based upon the ability to get the energy that is part of the sense to accurately give information, that is, we call it intelligent information, that is whole and that we can communicate well enough to others. That becomes a problem because so many forces exist that the sense itself is at a point where it has more errors than accuracy in what it perceives. And it's also diminished because the spirit part, which is the thought of God, is not in balance itself. When spirit becomes either too much on the second part of God's mind, which is too much love focus and not enough on the creative side, it's imbalanced, or vice versa. And you have human beings caught in this incredible, we'll call it, swinging back and forth about illusions on either side of that very thing. And then once the thought of God is not well understood, then the sense that is created from the thought is created out of mostly selfishness and ignorance. And then the process declines, and it becomes one in which, instead of saying that people really have any kind of accurate senses, they have senses that are mostly non-sensible and sometimes non-empathic and we'll call it mental thinking correctly. So So people have these issues because they live in a realm that it's very difficult to develop their senses well enough to be able to get past a tremendous amount of misunderstanding and illusion. Illusion means that whatever light they perceive is mixed in with a lot of stuff that is darkness. And the darkness tends to overpower the light, and people become very confused about what their senses may be telling them. Therefore, the senses are basically non-senses for most people in the physical world. The senses are critical, though, because without the senses, intelligent activity is almost impossible to achieve, and the balance of spirit between creation and the ability to give it to others becomes terrible, and people either fail to create, or they create in ways that is, we call it selfish, and they try to prevent others from necessarily receiving benefit from their creations. Many times they try to control others. So all of this starts getting very mixed up and sloppy, and so the senses of humans, which are supposed to provide the necessary information to do what God's mind is, which is to become a creative life being that grows more of life and its creator, becomes the opposite. It becomes a deadly or diminishing life destroyer, and one that diminishes its own creator, sometimes also diminishing its ability to sense its own creator. This is a fascinating element to the sense factor. Senses are there supposedly to help us, and they're necessary, to help us become both individuals and stay connected with all of life at the same time. And neither is achieved when we are in significant levels of illusion. Now you could say, well, why did God make it that way? Why did God make it a lot easier? You know, a lot of people ask me that. The problem, if you look at it from God's perspective, is that in order to improve upon the system that we're talking about, the requirement is that the lower be in control of the improvement, or there will be no freedom, and it's all just a puppet show. So ultimately, there is improvement that can be garnered, but it must come from the lower forms of life, not God. And in the case of human being, it needs particularly to come from human beings rather than be handed to them by higher beings, including God. And this is most disturbing to a lot of human beings, because they say, well, if God exists, why doesn't it just help me? If I'm an illusion, why doesn't it get rid of my illusion for me? Well, that's an interesting question, but the answer is obvious. The more that God did that, the less the human being would be a self-created being, and the more it would be a puppet or a slave or both. And that is not what God is seeking. It is, strangely, mostly what the dark side is seeking. So we could say that the answer to what humans sometimes say they want is found more on the dark side than on God's side. Of course, they're attracted to that, and that's how the dark side grows. Okay. Now, so when we check out the physics, we can say that there is a the sense is telling us what the intensity is of our experience of other energy around us, because our senses have to be equal to or greater than the energy around us in order to sense whatever we're sensing. And we sense that other thing in terms of its frequency and its phase or direction, but we also pick up a lot about its dimensionality by its intensity. And that's the part that most people misinterpret. A lot of people, if they sense things that have high intensity, they may react to those things in a, we'll say, a positive way, even when they are destructive to life and their creator, because they believe that intensity in itself is a positive thing. Remember that the intensity comes as a conversion of the dimensionality being hidden from the person who's sensing. So they don't perceive the real nature of what the dimensionality factor is to the particular sense they're dealing with and its interaction with themselves. Instead, they may react strictly to how intense the feeling of the sense is, either in sensational terms or in emotional terms or in monastic terms. This is a mistake, but humans are prone to making that particular mistake frequently. Okay, the dimensionality is the big hidden part of our senses. How do you know that? Well, all you have to do is just ask anybody. Most people are aware of their physical senses, which are really etheric, but electromagnetic, but we'll call it physical. To a large extent, they are aware of their physical senses. So if they're touching something, they're smelling something, they're tasting something, hearing something, seeing something, they get it. They actually, that part they can sense, okay? Most people. But they don't perceive it in correct fashion as far as it, whether or not it's spiritual, because their spirit in their sense is imbalanced. Therefore, the sense itself isn't working properly. So they don't perceive God very well within it. And they don't perceive many times whether or not an interaction is intelligent, because they are more concerned with the intensity of the feeling rather than its intelligence, because if they could truly understand the intelligence in the interactions, they could combine that with the spirit, balance the whole thing out, and they would have, at the end of the day, or at the end of the time that they sense, they would have a fairly complete understanding of the sense and be able to use it to grow more of life and more of God. This is, we'll call it the general rule. But now let's move to our astral feelings, emotional feelings. And those, most people have very limited understanding of any dimensionality to it. So we can sense there's some dimensionality to the physical senses, but not complete, and they're imbalanced. And we can sense almost none of the astral dimensionality issues, because the other dimension to, or physics to emotions is the direction of the emotion. And so we just can't sense that. We say, well, I feel loving, or I feel this particular feeling, or I feel that particular feeling. The feeling itself can be recognized, but our ability to determine what that feeling means in its full, we'll say, full sense, meaning how much it helps to grow life, how much it helps to grow more of God, and how much are we doing in that, that is almost completely vacant to us about anything that is emotional. Only when it becomes universally loving, where we get the direction to be completely away from ourselves and in service to helping others to do the same, then at that point, the senses in the astral body start becoming more noticeable in terms of the directionality, because we now notice the difference between being selfish and things moving towards us only for our own edification and being, we'll say, truly unselfish and giving in a universal way so that it helps others to become more giving. And that's where the difference lies between the two kinds of feelings. physical feelings, we have a general, not great, but a better sense of what the feeling is about. Emotions, very bad feeling, a very bad sense about those feelings. We don't really get it. And the ones that we do get are the ones that we have converted to full love, which is rare in most people. And then you get to the mental senses, and now there's another dimension which has to do with time. And we don't grasp that time is separating time from space, and therefore that develops tremendous forces in our interactions with people. And so when we have that take place, we just ignore it. Most people are oblivious to what we call mental error, a mental sensory error, because they don't even barely sense they have mental senses. And when they do, they have no idea about the dimensional missing pieces from it, which is time. And, well, it's time and space, really. But so we aren't able to truly plan things in a mental way that really works very well for us. And this causes a further illusion in people. And when you combine that with the tremendous amount of misunderstanding of our emotional feelings, besides the mental ones, we start really losing it in terms of being close to God. Yeah, we may still have some understanding of how we physically feel, but it's still clouded a lot by thing called Maya, which is forces of energy that surround our senses and diminish who and what we can sense about. And so that's a big deal. All right. So we are separated. It's really a separation issue. The senses themselves separate us from everything else when they don't work properly. They're meant to do the opposite. If the senses worked together and they didn't have illusions, we would be interconnected with everything and have a sense of oneness with everything. But the senses that most people have are the exact opposite. And so our senses of a vast amount of separateness, this is different than the development of individuality. We are supposed to develop that. But while we also unify our senses and develop a oneness with everything, and we just don't have that. So we have a selfish kind of individuality that we create and virtually no soul consciousness or a sense of oneness with all others as being co-creators of God together. This is all coming from this misdevelopment of sense, which is coming from a misperception of the vibrations of God's mind. In all parts of life, in all dimensions of existence, and in particular for human beings, the three lower dimensions that humans have sense on. Humans in general do not have virtually any ludic or intuitional plain sense, but they do have mental senses, and they do have, and that's lower and higher mental senses, and they do have astral senses, and they have physical senses. And that's where the major illusions lie. Now, in physics terms, we could say that human beings are separated from the world around themselves because their senses are not correctly developed, and they are not perceiving the vibrations of godliness that they are supposed to be eventually part of, only though through their own co-creations. And so this is the crux of the human dilemma in terms of the development of sense. Why is a unified sense then such a big deal? And this is where, if you read about anything in spiritual texts, they talk about this all over the place. A unified sense means that each body and all the senses in it, and there's seven senses that humans have in each body, the two of them are for God, in the sense of God, and the other five are the ones we think about as being relatively consistently the same among people, although they aren't. And those seven senses in each of three bodies gives us the ability to, if we use them at the exact same, or similar, I should say, frequency and phase and dimensionality that God's mind is at, then our sense would be to be a co-creator with God, and we would have a few problems. But if instead, which is what we do have, you don't have the senses at that particular phase and particular frequency, and the dimensionality isn't correct, if we don't have that as part of our sense, the results are pretty devastating. Because we no longer can sense God well enough. We can no longer sense others correctly. And we can't sense virtually anything in a way that is complete. Another thing happens. When the senses are not in the correct, we'll call it values of God, the result is that a person finds themselves inundated by forces in their own senses, which leads to disease and to the destruction of their own form that the senses are part of, with a concomitant destruction of the sense itself. So very serious consequences comes out of this whole deal. If you look in the textbook I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning, there's examples and even numerical values are assigned to some extent of some of these things that I'm talking about. It gives some idea of the relationship of one sense to the other from one plane to the next. And you can start gathering from what it's saying where God's mind is at and how these senses are separated from God's mind but still in an orderly fashion designed to work together and be unified. So, as an example, the astral senses have a numerical value when it's in mind's in accord with God's mind that is near perfect, and then human beings choose to, through their selfishness and illusion, alter their some. Each sense might be somewhat different from the others, but alter them so they're not even close to God's mind. So the astral body no longer is going to function that way. And then, in addition to that, when you're trying to join the senses, you have to get rid of a field that actually prevents them from being joined until they actually match each other. But you can destroy the field before that happens and screw yourself up. But at any rate, they're supposed to match, but not in the same frequency or at the same, but in a frequency which matches God's mind, so that it is matching, but it's not the same, between the astral world and the etheric physical. And the reason for that is that the astral world has an added dimension to it, which is the direction of energy. And the mental world, the same thing. It has another dimension to it, which we call unification of time with space. So, with whole time actually being there. So when we put it all together, we start saying, oh, wait a second. This whole thing has science to it. If you get it all straightened out, it all works. And if you don't get it all straightened out, it causes a great deal of grief. Okay, so we're going to take a little break right now for about 2.5 minutes. And when we come back, I'll explain this even further, how it all fits together, and hopefully you'll be able to follow it. A lot to think about, certainly more scientific than average show, but it needs to be so that people will maybe reconsider this idea of unifying their senses. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel. Kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. And tonight, we're talking about the development of unified sense. Now, unified sense is what most of the, we'll call it, the people who have written in the past or been great teachers of ageless wisdom have sought. And they have recognized that in order to move ahead in the development of consciousness, you needed a unified sense. There's some things that stand in the way to this, and they are deliberately there to prevent a unified sense for people who aren't ready for it. One of the things is a thing called webs. What are webs? Webs are the spillover of the retained energy that happens when a sense is used in a selfish way. The more we use any one or more senses, together or separately, selfishly, the more that there is this energy spillover from the sense itself that divides the sense dimensionally from the next dimensions that it is closest to and even beyond that, but mostly between it and the next dimensional sense. So let's say you have a sense of hearing in the physical world. That's, most people know what that is, right? And you also have an astral sense of hearing, which is considerably different in the astral world. The two senses, in theory, when they are godlike, they can be unified. They become unified together. They usually get unified as they are also unifying with the other senses in the body that they exist within. So all the physical senses usually start to unify, and then they start to unify some with the astral senses if they are starting to unify together. Here's the problem. There is this huge amount of energy that happens as soon as a thing called the spiritual gene or genes become enacted to create the senses of a particular body. And the spiritual gene is like karma. It has with it the spillover of energy. The last time that particular gene was used in a selfish way in a prior lifetime. So as soon as children are born, they start immediately with retained energy in their senses, to some degree from karma. Isn't that interesting? Now, they also develop a lot more of this energy as they grow older and are selfish. Or they may reduce some of the energy that spills over, particularly over time, if they are unusually, we'll say, spiritual and giving to others in ways that are wise. And so that could be a way to reduce this. The point is that the energy field, or webs, are there to actually keep the senses separate. Well, it seems counterproductive, doesn't it? Well, maybe. The good news is that it isn't all negative, because there are some positive benefits to having the energy field there. You don't necessarily respond with the same intensity. Remember, intensity is the misperception, oftentimes, of what's happening. It's not necessarily always bad to have intensity, but it is nonetheless more intense when the field, the energy field, isn't there. So let's say you don't have an energy field between your astral senses and your physical senses because you got rid of them in some weird way, taking some kind of drugs or cigarette smoking tends to do it. There's certain other things, a lot of stuff that can do it. And what happens, that takes over a lot of time for it to take place. Some of the things I said take more time than others. And you get little holes and eventually the energy field just can completely kind of go away. Then the intensity between the astral, as an example, and the physical or etheric physical senses becomes much greater. And the person is more prone towards, if particularly if they're selfish, becoming much more selfish, particularly if they are prone to possession, becoming much more possessed, or just generally misperception. Illusion can increase tremendously because the webs aren't there. So you can see that this is not a good thing. You don't want to get rid of these webs of energy until at such time you can really unify your senses by being a very spiritually developed person who is co-serving with your creator. Then the webs will naturally be burned off. Another thing that helps to get rid of the webs is the life energies called kundalinis, which tend to burn off the webs as they unify the senses. They do two things simultaneously. They help to unify the senses within a body, and then they start burning off the webs and unifying the senses between the bodies. Pretty interesting, yeah. And actually, one type of kundalini just moves into the next body and becomes the kundalini of that body, more or less. And so it's a really interesting interesting situation of how these kundalinis and other kinds of energies play a major factor in the unification of sense. Where did the kundalinis come from? Well, when spirit first is separated from God's mind, that happens on the spiritual plane, yes, atmic plane for those of you who are familiar with that word, but on the spiritual plane, the beginning of the spiritual plane, the highest part, spirit is separated, and then it starts to try to inform parts of energy, which is also separated from space and time. And when it starts to inform that, the interaction of, just like in God's mind, the interaction of spirit with less than intelligent activity produces the three kinds of kundalinis. They all come from the spiritual plane. Oh, you didn't know that? Well, actually, I wrote about that, Life and Meaning, but most people still don't understand it quite the way they should. And that's where it comes from. So, and that, those kundalinis are a source of demonic energies that eventually, over time, can bring about what we'll call great change. They actually start out, though, as a kind of accelerated elemental energy that becomes Devonic by almost magic, by the fact that they are swept up from the spiritual plane and brought into the physical world literally instantaneously. Normally that takes millions of years, but this happens instantaneously, and everything shifts around, and they go from acting more in a self-focused way to a very other-directed way almost instantly, which makes them very magical, provided that they're allowed to function without human interference, because when we interfere with the Kundalinis by various different things humans do, that usually results in some very serious problems, including disease and aging and destruction of our bodies and other things. But the Kundalinis are there for important purposes. The first of the Kundalinis, which is Shushumna, or not the Shushumna, it's Pingala, is that particular energy is also referred to in Chinese, we'll call it understanding, as qi. So when people talk about the qi, you got your qi, that's the first of the Kundalinis. And that Kundalini is very important, particularly in the joining together, unifying the etheric senses in the etheric physical body. It's prominent in that respect. The other Kundalinis add to it and provide nuances, but it's the main factor that keeps us physically alive, and that also leads to unification eventually when we live in ways that are co-creative with God. If we don't live in ways that are co-creative with God, the qi doesn't help us. It will become maya, which is a kind of a retained qi. And the destruction of our bodies and centers incurs sort of the reverse of what qi is supposed to do. When qi stops moving, that's when bad things tend to happen if you try to keep it in one place. And that's what happens when we are self-focused. Energy follows thought greater than its own, and when we focus on ourselves, the qi slows down, and it can eventually stop. It can lead to illness, disease, and eventually death. But certainly senselessness, long before that. Also, if people put on a lot of extra pounds, weight, that is a sign of retained energy and excessive amounts of retained qi, and diminishment of sense. It leads to increased illusion and all kinds of other problems. When you lose sense, you make more mistakes. So your life becomes treacherous, not only from the increased diseases of Kundalini that is retained or qi that is retained, but also you'll lose enough sense so that you make bad movements with your body. You make bad choices in how you move it and where you move it, all kinds of stuff like that. And the results are accidents, which really are nothing more than the diminishment of sense. Starts though, if you have, if you're consuming too much food, too many calories and you're not using them, particularly if you're not using them in a spiritual fashion, the results are going to be, a lot of diminishment of the proper movement of qi and the destruction of sense and the loss of coordination, and illness will occur more frequently, and this on and on. Okay, all that happens because, we make the choice in how we manage the system. Now, you could say, well, I never knew this before. How can I be held responsible? Well, the odd thing about everything that's spiritual is you usually find out after the fact that you've been selfish and you didn't care about this or that, and now you better change, and you've already suffered some of the consequences of it. It's just the way it is, because in order for us to have all the freedom that we really do need and want, we can't necessarily have, God saying every 5 seconds, well, you're still not doing this, you need to do that. You're like a big parent in the universe looking down on us. We don't have that. What we have is the ability to choose to be more, godly, more like God, godlike, or the choice to move away from that. The choice to move away from it has serious consequences. Okay, So unified sense has been the de facto way to achieve liberation from the human kingdom into the soul kingdom. It's the next kingdom beyond human. And it means that the soul liberates itself from the very narrow part of the higher middle world that it exists in and moves to live in a much broader part of the Buddhic realm. The point also is that it can only do that when the senses are unified in all three of the lower bodies, and they can only be unified if, unless you're talking about a dark master, that's a whole different story, but they can only be unified, if you're on the side of light, or God, godly, by getting the frequency of the planes matching the frequency of the senses, matching the phase or direction that energy moves in the planes, matching each of the senses, matching the dimensionality, being whole or a lack of dimensionality, either or. And the result is you either end up being more godlike or you end up being more dark. When those things match up, what flows between the senses is light. Now, it's not exactly the light of the world that we're in, because we're also dealing with the light of the astral world, the light of the mental world. And so the lights of those worlds is actually different in quality because of the dimensionality factor. We think of light as it is represented in terms of the three dimensions we take note of here. There's actually another dimension to light anyway, but regardless of that, let's say those three dimensions are what we're talking about for the sake of discussion. And light has another dimension to it, which again has to do with the direction. There is no light in the astral world, even if you have the three qualities of light that exist in the physical world, the right frequency, the right phase, okay, and as we would put it, the right type of intelligent activity. Those are put together, we say, oh, there's light. That's what we see as light. But in the astral world, in order to complete the light, you also have to have the direction of wise giving. Wise giving is, we'll call it universal love, has to apply to all those who are benefited in a specific way, which is that they will become better at giving themselves. And we have to feel that. In the astral world, you have to feel it. In the mental world, you have to think it. This is kind of a strange thing. We'll get to that. Okay. And we have to feel it in the here and now, in the present, as well as being able to recognize that it's been happening in the past. We don't have to be able to figure out whether it's going to continue on or how long it will in the future while we're in the astral world, because you have directionality, but you don't have the completion of time. So that's the light of the astral world, and that light has to connect with the physical world. The lights are not the same, but they are in sympathetic vibration with each other. And they allow the senses to become able to function without diminution from forces. So that's when you experience that light, then you are experiencing a lack of force. Okay, we get to the light of the mental world includes the ability to have not only this universal wise giving, love, wisdom, we'll call it, available, we'll say, but it has to move in the direction of the future. Now, what does it mean to move in the direction of the future? It means that it helps others to become more truthful. So not only does it help others to become more giving and wise in the immediate sense, but it means that in the future, they will become more truthful. The truth may be different. The truth that we realize in our giving in the present, but it will help them to become more truthful in the future, and also in retrospect, it'll help us become more truthful as they become more truthful. So it's sort of one side helps the other. This is the difference between the mental light and the astral light. The astral light is right now. It's an immediate effect that we can feel, which is good. But we can't, in the astral world, help others to become more truthful just by astral light. We need the mental light to complete the picture so that someone else can become more truthful in the future. And the more truthfulness will likely be a different, even wider and better truth than the truth that we are creating at that moment. So the thing that's good about our truth is it helps others to become more truthful because it will help them grow the truth at some time in the future. Now, you might say, well, wait a second, if what you're saying is true, then the past, present, and future are all connected. And that's true. But since truth is constantly changing and growing, hopefully, if it's enlightened, then the result is that you can't really say that the future is completely determined. What is determined is that people will create more truth. What that truth exactly will be cannot be determined, because each person is their own creator, and God is not the deterministic being that some people prefer. Now, that's a little complicated, but if you think it through, you may have a better sense of what time is and a better sense of what monastic light is. And a lot of people have a lot of trouble with these concepts, so I'm throwing out a scientific explanation tonight, which may help. Or it may just confuse even further people that were already confused, because these are not simple ideas. I'm not expecting that immediately that someone will hear me and go, oh, yes, I've got it. No, you'll probably hear it and say, what the heck did he say? But, you know, you could go back and listen to it, and if you think about it as clearly as you can, it might start making some sense to you. All right, so we have three kinds of light. There's the light of the etheric physical world, there's the light of the astral world, and there's the light of the mental world. What's so important about that? Now, ultimately, what you need to have is senses that are able to completely sense light. The reason senses aren't unified, another explanation of the process, is that their ability to sense light is extremely limited. Almost non-existent, as I put it in Life's and Meaning. And that's the problem. If you can't sense the light, you will misread the darkness, maybe even be attracted to it. Because light is what we need to ultimately completely sense God. And we have to have the light of every dimension of time and space to fully complete our understanding and our co-creation with God. That's more than what we're talking about so far, because I'm only talking about what humans deal with, but I'm still, you can see we're getting in the right direction, so to speak, by talking about light being the issue in terms of sense. Joining these three kinds of light together is an interesting experience. Most people think that when you unify the senses in the three bodies, they become just like one sense. That's kind of a misnomer. I've said that myself many times because it's easier for people to understand it that way. But it's not really completely true. What really happens is that each sense still is an individual sense, but the time factor in the senses is zero. In other words, there is no time that it takes to move from one sense to the next in order to operate the senses. So, because they're operating at the speed of light of the plane that they exist on. And then between planes, they are connected. There's no more web. Remember, in order to enlighten the senses, the webs have to be, it's called burned off by the kundalini. So you have to have all three kundalini to burn them off. And so, that when the lights connect, an odd thing, you could say, happens. You know, when we talk about it as enlightenment of the bodies. But the other thing is something more fascinating than just that. It is that the light that is experienced, it is the combined dimensionality of the three dimensions all creating more of God at the same time in a way that enlightens not just yourself, of course, but the existence of life in all of the dimensions that the enlightened senses exist in. So you get a simultaneous effect that it happens at the speed of light of the light of that plane, but it happens between the planes all at the same time as well. And this is the part that's hardest to understand, that the senses in the physical world start moving at the same speed of light as the highest speed that you can sense with, in matching senses and matching, we'll call it connections, with the highest sense that you have. Now, let me try to explain this so that in terms of physics, what's really happening. Dimensionality is something that gets rid of the perspective of intensity and replaces it with the perspective of experience of God in place of intensity of environment or things or people or places or whatever. So you don't any longer experience an intensity of the environmental sense or the interactive sense of other beings. You experience the intensity of being God at a certain level, though. And so that's what happens. And the reason you jump from the physical speed of light to unifying, when you unify the senses, that the speed of light for all the dimensional aspects becomes the speed of light of the higher mental world, because that's the highest part. We're assuming this as a human being now. The human being is going to have a full dimension, a full sense, we'll say, dimensional sense. The dimension then switches to God. And so the experience is no longer of what the interaction is, no longer of what the spirit is that is part of the sense, which leads to the intensity of experience, but rather it becomes the experience of being God. And that experience is becomes the light of the highest dimension at which the highest sense is used. The lower senses are still used together. Do not think that I'm ignoring them. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. They are used completely together. It's just that the experience is at the speed of the highest level of dimensionality, because that is the experience of being God, no longer the experience of the sense of the smaller things that you're sensing in the lower realms. Doesn't mean you don't have those senses of things. You don't lose them. It's just that the totality of the experience, the thing that's so amazing about it, is the experience of understanding and being God at the highest level you can function at. Now, this is the amazing thing that some of the great sages have written about as having these fantastic experiences about, because they're describing, oftentimes what I just made more scientific and more causative, the experience. They're describing it more mystically or semi-mystically, and I'm just demystifying it and making it into a more, we'll say, causal explanation, more higher mental explanation of what's really taking place. Okay, so an odd thing happens now. In terms of the time factor, because time is related to the speed of light, a person is expanding their overall experience of existence, because they're no longer experiencing their senses, even if they're physically alive, at the physical level. They're experiencing their senses at the higher mental level sometimes. And the results are a tremendously expanded sense of life. and a change in perspective in their ability to be creative, too. They can, in a very short time, if they're using their senses in these enlightened ways, create amazing things that would take hundreds of years, maybe, for a person to normally think of creatively and come up with some intelligent activity to perceive or to produce, excuse me. And the results are remarkable. The person begins to live more godlike, literally. I'm not saying they're God. I'm just saying they experience and live in a godlike way. And, of course, this is what the development of unified sense supposedly is supposed to lead to. But I'm just giving you the reasons why tonight, so that people will not get discouraged by some of the things that we'll talk about in a few minutes that happens when people don't do this stuff, you know, and they get way off the mark. All right, so as we check this system out, this is all designed by God, obviously, and it's really a remarkable system because the rewards for unifying sense are profound. The changes in existence and life are profound. And the benefits are truly, we'll say, greater than almost imaginable. Now, I suspect that some people are going to say, well, how do I know this guy's telling us the truth? Maybe he just figured, thought of all this stuff and it's a bunch of nonsense. Of course, it fits a bunch of other things you can read, but they are not as explanatory, maybe, in conceptual terms, but they do describe some of this. But the thing that is most important is that it makes sense. So, basically, when we look at this whole thing, the sense of what we're doing makes sense. And we are changing our senses so that they actually work in way better ways. As the senses in the bodies work better, the bodies themselves improve, they age less, they get diseased less, and there's a general improvement in all aspects of the life of that body. It doesn't mean they will live forever, by the way, in that body, because bodies are composed of energies that can only withstand these particularly hyper sensitive senses that are unified together and mostly functioning alike, they can only endure that for a relatively short period of time because the bodies are made out of energy. The energy has to be free itself after some period of time from this, we'll say, very strong enlightening process. It's not bad for the energy. The energy tends to move away from being gravitational and more towards a divonic, meaning that it's working together with other energies on a volunteer basis. And it's doing so because it chooses to. But nonetheless, that being the case, it only can handle that for so long, and eventually it has to have time to be away from the informing source of the spirit in the body. Spirit itself can put too many demands on energy for if it's done for too long a period of time. In terms of human terms, it's 147 years. It's a very specific number that it works perfectly in. You could live longer, but not live more spiritual. At any rate, that's for humans now. It doesn't mean anything if you're not a human being, because that's just how humans function, because they use certain types of elemental energy and certain types of divinic energies to construct our bodies, masters or members of the next kingdom or kingdoms tend to do something different, and they have a different system that they're working with. Okay, so if we are going to have a unified sense, then we need to have a sense that is working cooperatively, dimensionally, as well as behaving godlike in numerous other ways between and among the senses within the body that they're part of. It's fairly complicated, but in reality, the concept is not that complicated. It's probably doing it that's so complicated. what are the problems and why isn't everybody getting this? Because it seems so wonderful. And how come everybody is having such a hard time, or they don't want to even know about it, or if they do know about it, they don't want to do it? Well, there are consequences to failure. The development of unified sense, if it was just a straight line and everybody, you know, gradually got better and eventually enlightened their sense and it wasn't such a big problem, we'd all be great. It would be a fantastic way for human beings to develop. But in order for that to be true, you would almost have to have an outside natural force to make it happen. And that's against God's plan for humans and all life, is that it has to be self-created. Humans have to make the choices themselves, and they have to find the truth in what I'm saying themselves, and they have to create the light within themselves. That's not so easy. What stands in the way is that not only do humans have all of the forceful consequences of a lifetime they've already lived or are living at the present time, but they have parts of karma from the past, some of which is entered into in this lifetime, and they don't even know about that in any conscious way. So things happen that don't seem to them to be right. They resent the fact that they try to do good, and sometimes still bad things happen to them and others they care about. This lack of understanding of the past and prior incarnations causes some humans to become quite resistant to the development of their senses in a way which is enlightening, and to doing things which are good for the sake of being good, being godly. And they may even rebel against it because life doesn't seem exactly fair to them, and they're seeking this in some mannerism. They aren't obviously taking responsibility, usually even for earlier parts of this life, much less prior lives of which they have virtually no memory. And that's their problem. That's the problem with the system. Now, some people react to this by an acceptance of the fact they can see within themselves in this life now that they are selfish, and they can accept the obvious, it seems, that in prior lifetimes they were probably even more selfish. They likely are getting a little better as time goes by, so the assumption is they did some things that were very selfish that did not yet play itself out, because when you do that, you create forces, and the forces separate time from space. When time is separated from space, the results of the things that they did that were terrible in some circumstances are not fully realized. Some might be somewhat during the lifetime they were prior in, but others may not be. And those things come out, you know, in this lifetime. Depends what genes we use to construct that personality, and that throws certain kinds of karma to become more active in that person at this time. And then they experience this, you know, sometimes, you know, disgruntled attitude of, well, gee, why do I have this happening? Or why does somebody else that's close to him having it happen? And it's because we are free to develop this ourselves. No one's going to come and knock on our door and say, by the way, for three lifetimes ago, you did these things, now this is going to be bad for you. And you can say, well, why didn't somebody do that? Why doesn't our soul or our solar angel let us know, oh, you had to be constructed out of these genes, and this is what you're going to live for, and so astrology tries to do it, and sometimes it gets it right. Why doesn't it just an automatic? Why don't, as soon as you're old enough, you get a little thing and here's the message and boom, there it is. And the answer is that it still has to do with this idea of self-creation. Part of self-creation is self-discovery and the lack of self in that discovery at times. I know this sounds strange. because we like to think of a paternal, more paternal model in our relationship with our soul. But in reality, that isn't the way we tend to live. And that's not the real world. It's our fantasy about it. The truth of the world is that if something or someone came and did that, we would not necessarily be the better for it. And oftentimes we aren't when someone who seems to have some understanding about us may try to explain it to us. There is as much a rebellion to hearing it as there is an acceptance and a willingness to change it. Even when someone tries to help about something someone is doing in this lifetime, they may not listen, they may resent it, they may react in the opposite ways. I mean, even the most simplest of things, people react very much that way. Okay, so what you have, then, is that self-discovery of one's failures in prior lives, even if you don't know it specifically when and exactly how in a prior life it happened, but you identify it and own it as a part of who you are, is very critical in each lifetime to change. And it isn't everything at once, and it's only certain things that are given to us in terms of our spiritual genetic structure, along with our non-spiritual, as well as the familiar people and other people that we're going to come in contact with. And a lot of that is actually thought out in a developmental sense by the soul. But the soul doesn't involve itself after that into cause and telling us, well, you got to do this, you got to do that. You should have known this, you should have known that. It doesn't do those things. As a matter of fact, you could get almost none of that information, no matter how much you beg your soul or angel, which is like the oversoul, please, great one, tell me what I've done wrong. If you just let me know, I'll work on it right away and get on it, you know. Nothing. Getting back. And if you say, help me to help somebody else, and I'll use everything I can first, you might get some help from a soul angel, but you won't if it's about you, for sure. And because that God found in its wisdom, and so have the beings that work with God, that are more godly than we are, that discovery is a critical part of creation. And you can't create more of yourself if you don't create the understandings you have of what's less of yourself and what's wrong with yourself and what may have been coming from prior lives, but you don't have to know the specifics, you just need to see how they're interacting and operating in the here and now and will in the future. So this is the answer to that rather difficult question. And for some people, it's not going to be a good enough answer. They still want the parent. they want the soul to come in and say, hey, this is what you got to do. Every time you don't do it, I'll hit you on the head 3 times. Some people really want that. That is just not the way the universe was created, and it goes against free will, and eventually will lead to a bad outcome. So that's the reason. And I went through stages where I thought that should have been the way it was, and then I later became aware myself that, well, that really isn't a wise thing. But you get into these things that are so, it seems so counterintuitive that the universe is constructed this way. It seems like, well, gee, it's going to make it much more hard, much more difficult to change then, because you really don't have anybody feeding back to you immediately in real time whenever you're screwing up or anything. Well, we do have some of that. When we are directly going to harm someone else, we have a conscience, and it helps. But the conscience is different than knowledge of prior things we did. It's about what we're going to do, not what we have. And you say, well, what about feeling guilty? Isn't that a part of what we did do? A sense of guilt is the misapplied sense of self-responsibility. The sense of guilt comes from humans contaminating our sense of self with a, let's say, a negative feedback about who or what we are that we adopt eventually for ourselves. Solar angels aren't really into that. They aren't trying to make us guilty. They are trying to let us know that something we're about to do may cause harm. And then we can choose or not choose to, or choose not to, heed it. But that's still different than this whole business of being aware of all the different karmic issues that we did in prior lifetimes and that are destined to come out in this lifetime because we created that for ourselves while we were part of our soul. Now, isn't that a confusion? Yes, that's right. In a higher level of consciousness, while we rejoined our soul in our last round of lifetime, we actually chose this level and type of karma for ourselves. I know it sounds strange, but that's true. That's a fact. It's just that as an amnesiac right now, we have to discover it while our senses are so diminished as a result of having done those things in the past. It's like we have to allow it to play out and overcome it. So it's actually every one of these karmic outcomes that diminish sense and hurt us or whatever is an opportunity to overcome and increase our sense and to make it more enlightened so that we can become more godlike by self-creation. That was a big mouthful. Okay, so now when we examine this, it starts to make some sense why all this is happening with our senses. And maybe it makes some sense why we are not immediately informed of what's wrong and what we need to do about it. Like given some kind of whole lesson plan, as soon as we're born, some super conscious state, letting us know ahead of time what we need to do to change. Because self-discovery is part of the process of getting around the karma. You don't want to live the karma. You want to live the opportunity to change the karma and create light out of the darkness that you have already made. That's what needs to happen. Most people try to shirk that. They don't want to do that. They look for some way around it. Well, there aren't any ways around it because all you can do, there is delays. All you can do is delay it, but then it gets much worse. Or you can increase it. That will delay it even further and make it much, much, much worse. But, you know, people do both, right? They do those sorts of crazy things, thinking that that's the solution for how they're going to deal with the situation. So now we start to see why there's so much resistance to developing a unified sense. We're kind of like, got a lot of issues. Now, in a young soul that has had very few lifetimes, there is very little resistance to unifying the senses, and believe it or not, there's a huge opportunity for serious, significant growth of making, improving the senses in the first few dozen lifetimes that a soul on a specific planet incarnates. So it really is not a bad time to do it. And some people make a lot of development in it. But gradually, they're also building up selfish things that they interact with and do. And that becomes then a resistance to even further development of unified sense. Matter of fact, it almost goes in waves, up and down. And it is not a continuous, you know, movement forward. And that's part of the way we choose to make it for ourselves, but it's also understandable from the way the whole physics and the interaction and choices that humans make within it is. It's sort of, you can say, self-explanatory. Younger souls tend to make greater strides. They also tend to, when they do make, we'll say, terrible choices and mistakes, they tend to be bigger rather than smaller. So eventually it catches up with them, and their short-term growth spurts for several lifetimes or more may be greatly hampered by a tendency to exaggerate the separation of sense that happens as they do some things that may be horrendously selfish, and that recognize it. Remember, selfishness separates sense. Okay. So development of self is also diminished as the senses are separate. Okay? The development of self, as it accelerates and becomes part of the higher self, that tends to unify senses. You can only unify the senses to a meager, mundane level when you're developing the lower self. Now, what does that mean? Well, let's look at it from this standpoint. Let's say that you want to become a really good baseball player, and you decide that you're willing to discipline your senses so that they work together pretty well. Your astral senses are pretty well working together with your physical, and so is your mental. So when you play the game of baseball, you are very accurate about how you throw balls and how you swing bats and what plays you play here and what ways you make the decision there. Everything seems to work out well for you because you've disciplined yourself mundanely. But the thing that you don't do when you do that is you don't try to discipline the senses to be in accord with God's mind. Matter of fact, they may be so far off from God's mind that there's not even any similarity in the way that you play baseball and God. But you still can be a pretty good baseball player in a totally personal, mundane sense. What's missing is that great thing I talked about unifying your senses to enlighten them so that you are helping to enlighten everybody else at the same time, the great joy of that, the wonderment of co-creating with your creator, is missing from someone who just mundanely disciplines themselves as an athlete or someone who maybe is playing a musical instrument or whatever it might be. You don't get to that higher level, and the senses do not unify along God's mind. They unify only to each other in their darkness. Senses can be quite skillfully used if they are developed in unison, even in darkness. This is the danger of the dark side, is that it can be skillful in many things it does, because it doesn't necessarily diminish its sense of lower self or its sense of ability to achieve something, because it works outside light. But it is certainly not co-creating with God, and it has no joy of doing that. And what it does create, because it is so far away from God, it has many problems. Some of those problems are that in order to maintain the integrity of the relationship of the senses and the sense itself, a person has to steal energy using power from others. And then that energy is used to reinforce this odd relationship in darkness that their senses have. They can do this skillfully, and they could, as long as they have enough people to steal energy from, they could do this for thousands of years and grow their senses amazingly strong and become very serious offenders against God. They can challenge God and its very survivability as a source of life in whole worlds. And they've managed to destroy whole worlds. So you see, the dark side has its own way. And it's kind of the same principles of sorts, but it isn't using light. It's using darkness. It replaces power with spiritual balance. It tends to, it, its hope is to keep its consciousness at the same level while it grows tremendously its purpose and creativity and its ability to use force and power over other life. It doesn't actually keep its consciousness the same. It loses a little bit of consciousness in everything it does. It's selfish. But it doesn't notice it, and sometimes needs to do others for a long time. So the main thing that it is doing is that it's living its life through the first and third part of God's mind, and the second part is virtually stupefied, or it's petrified, as close as it can petrify. Well, all of this is terrible in a sense because it means that it's easier for the dark side to unify its senses away from God by using power to steal energy from others than it is for people who are spiritually trying to develop themselves to unify their senses in light, which is quite difficult and requires a willingness to experience a very negative part of self and to accept and be humble about one's failures. Very few people have that. And so it's easier to become dark than it is to become light in this system as it is right now. That doesn't mean that we're condemned to some kind of failure situation, but it does mean that we need to be vigilant about not allowing this to be a seductive element, especially against spiritually disciplined people, because as you fail in spiritual discipline, you become a good target for the dark side, and you may move into that thing. So it is one of those things that you really have to have a good understanding of, which is what I'm teaching about tonight, right? And it's one of the things that few people know about. And most people are unaware that people who are dark can be amazingly skillful in their use of sense to destroy others. And we need to have some respect for that, even if we don't like it, and we will do everything we can to stop it. But we still have to say, well, yeah, they've got that ability, we better be careful. Too much of the time there's a cavalier attitude about it with the ignorance of the dark side and things that it can do. And people get caught off guard after a time. And that's when the worst things have been done. So we need to be careful about that. All right, so the dark side can unify its sense, but only around the lower self and the personality. And it seeks to separate itself from God. And its level of separation from God is its means of power and control over others. It seeks to enslave people and others, and even animals, to keep its own senses and form together indefinitely, immortally, in its own belief system. It's not true, but it believes that. And so it thinks also it can destroy its creator, or it convinces others that, and or it convinces others the creator doesn't exist. So it has a number of formidable means of unifying its senses that don't involve light. Now, this is a very strange thing. You might say, well, what kind of energy is it that doesn't involve light that can unify sense? Well, there's a thing that has recently been described as dark energy. And dark energy is not the energy that is evil, but evil uses the principles of dark energy to achieve quite a few things that allows it to interdimensionally unify its senses in darkness. Because it's not good enough for it to just unify the senses in one body. It needs to be unified in the three bodies we consider human as much as it can with the mental body, which is right now not all the senses, luckily. But it uses this as a formidable weapon to be able to intimidate, enslave, and physically and emotionally destroy people, and eventually mentally in the present day sense of it. So it uses this as a true weapon. And one way to understand the principles of using what we'll call dark energy is, without, I can't talk completely about this because science doesn't really understand it yet, but the one way to understand it is that dark energy unifies by separation. Okay, I know that this is going to be very hard to understand it. Well, let's look at what is known about dark energy, and then I think you'll understand it. That evil uses a system, but I'm not going to describe it completely for you tonight, but, or maybe any time in the near future. But the way dark energy works is that it is moving everything in the universe away from everything else. Now, you might say, you didn't know that. Well, it's true. If you look up physics and astronomy, you'll see that it's a true statement. They don't know why. I mean, I'm just describing something that's observable fact of sorts. And so dark energy causes everything to move away from everything else. It's a separating force. It's the counter to gravity. Originally, the people thought the universe would all slam back together because of gravity, and it turns out it's moving far away and apart from everything else. Everything is moving apart from everything else. And this is what dark energy does. But it does unify pieces, like parts of a galaxy, or it unifies maybe several galaxies together who might be moving away from everything else. So it has that effect, which is kind of odd. So it's not tearing apart galaxies, it's moving large things away. Now, since we are a microcosm of how the galaxies and the universe works in general, our bodies are, it's a really odd thing, but it's true. If you could imagine this, dark people in who are members of evil, are able to hold their bodies together by taking parts of energy and making sure that it doesn't have any light in it, which would make it dark energy, and keep their body together but separated from all other bodies, and then keep their bodies separated but connected together, because that's what dark energy does, indefinitely, in a kind of crystallized state. So there's a certain formula of distance between all the senses in their bodies. They're not truly being unified. They're not like the galaxies aren't truly all joining together as one galaxy. A group of galaxies may stay together, but they will become separated from all other galaxies over time. And now, astronomy doesn't know this exactly. Astronomy thinks that every galaxy will be separated from another galaxy, but that's not true. But they don't know that right now. Maybe I shouldn't even be saying that, because, again, it goes beyond what is understood. But the most important part about this is, if we look at how evil is using this in their own bodies, it's not any different. The same principle applies. Now, you're still going to probably ask me, well, what is this dark energy? I know what it is, I'm not going to tell you. I think I know what it is. I'm not going to tell you. Because, again, it would probably help the dark side more than the side of light right now to know that. Because the people who claim to be on the side of light, or somewhat are, because they won't believe me, will just reject it. And the weird thing is, a few of those dark dudes probably do believe some of the stuff I say. And they might actually use it to do no good with. So we don't want that to happen, right? Okay. So it's a separation thing, but it also keeps certain things together. And so the darkness is using dark energy. Now, the name dark energy came from astronomers and physicists. But the point is that, and they aren't necessarily evil people, but strangely, they could identify the fact that it's dark energy because it doesn't respond to or with or in any way connected to light. That's the reason. That's the reason we can't sense it. Now, can you sense dark energy if you have enlightened senses? Yes, you can sense dark energy. If your senses are fully enlightened, you can sense it, or if you've driven all the light out of your senses and you use it to do that, you can sense it as well. People in between, though, which is almost the rest of the world, the rest of humanity, at least in this world, they don't sense it. So we don't have a sense of it, so we don't, you know, we can see effects of it. We can't really say, oh, there's the dark energy. Can't sense it. It confuses. Confuses physicists. All right. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with this idea that there is a way for evil people to use the concepts of unified sense to their advantage by ignoring some of the principles of how light unifies senses and instead use a method how some types of energy, which we'll call dark energy, can do it for them in a different way. Also, they can communicate through dark energy at speeds of way that exceed the speed of light by millions of times. How do they do that? Well, I can't talk about that either. All right. So, but all of this has to do, again, with the development of unified sense or unique ways to unify sense, even for dark people. Now, when unified sense is unified in dark people, it crystallizes. That means that it doesn't cause the senses to join. It causes them to become connected in a very rigid way at a certain distance from each other, where they still respond to equal and even vibrations, but the vibrations are only vibrations that are not in accord with God's mind. Never. So the secret to being evil is to being antithetical to God. If you aren't antithetical to God, becoming evil would not be possible. So you have to get to that point where you have an antithesis. That means you're against God, and what God stands for, and what God is. All of those, all of the above, you might say. All right. When people are seeking to enlighten sense, they're doing something entirely different. They are seeking to be their creator, and as they do, they experience first joy and then bliss. What is the joy? The joy is the effects of serving others, and as you serve the others, experiencing some of their service collectively coming back to you. It's like compounding your service hundreds of times over, and that's joy. The sense of it is your senses are picking up some of the light of the other folks that you are helping to create more light in them, and that they're doing, going on, it's pay it forward kind of thing. And so you're experiencing that simultaneously. And since the time factor is unified, you're able, as they experience it, you experience it, and so that's joy. What's that? What's the difference between that and bliss? Okay. Bliss is where the state that we're talking about, where you experience where one person does it, and then others from that person do it, and joy is little pieces of each one. But in bliss, you experience the big picture all the time. Because time becomes everyone doing it for all time, forever. And bliss becomes the effects of that on your senses. That's a little hard to understand. That bliss is really, truly an intuitional and beyond intuitional, into the atmic plane, experience. And it's hard to describe it to human beings because we can barely perceive what I'm saying. You know, it's like, well, how do you do that? You know, but I'm explaining it correctly. It's just that the words are hard to buy into. Like, what? Okay. Joy is a little bit easier to understand, but bliss is more difficult. But bliss is the experience ultimately of unified sense. So when people say, or great sages have said, great writers said, unify your senses and you shall live a life of bliss. Well, that's a true statement. Now, it may not be explained in any causative way, and you're not going to be able to explain it to everybody, well, why that's it. But now you can, because I'm giving the whys of the same statement. It's not like I'm saying anything that's unique But the whys have not been explained before, and so a lot of people couldn't understand the exact causes of the situation. As we understand the cause and then experience either joy or bliss, all the resistances that I talked about a little while ago that people have, the negative attitudes, the arguments about, well, why is this happening to me? So I did something wrong in a prior lifetime, you say, but I shouldn't have to pay for it now, and even if I am, why did I choose that? But once you start getting into the joy and bliss, it no longer the pain and suffering that is experienced in the model before that diminishes and eventually disappears. Joy helps to diminish it, and bliss eliminates it. So we don't want to become blissful because it's some real cool experience. We want to be blissful because it protects us from falling into the why me attitude and the other negative sides of, we'll say, living out some of our karmic consequences, and that even of our nation and, sometimes the whole world. So we not only have personal karma, there's world karma. So we get around that, or we don't become fettered by it, because the joy and eventually bliss prevents us from being so negative in response to the sense of feeling that we have coming from it. We don't feel the very high levels of pain and suffering that come from loss of consciousness, which is the result of being an illusion, because we're not an illusion. And the bliss, like, causes us to experience a totally opposite reaction. So some people then say, well, all of these great sages, everybody's doing this, they seem to have no concern for the suffering of humanity and for the suffering of others. No, that's not true. They have grave concern, but they don't themselves suffer from it. There is a difference. Now, when do you stop suffering from it? Well, you stop suffering from it in your last lifetime as a human. Thank you very much. Or when you become a member of the next kingdom, which is right before. You become a member right after you, at the end of your last lifetime as a human. So those are the things that we're looking forward to. And you say, well, don't I have hundreds of lifetimes I got to get to before I get there? Well, yes, I agree. It isn't as rosy maybe as it sounds, but at least we know that there is an end to pain and suffering when we reach these exalted levels of consciousness and co-serve with our Creator. So at least that gives us some solace. I'm not saying it's a fix-all. You know, this is not a quick fix. Go and do this and everything's going to be perfect for you. No, unification of senses involves a long struggle of hundreds of lifetimes, and it is riddled with all kinds of miserable experiences. But the long-term benefits are huge. And once you start experiencing your Creator, even if it's long before your senses are fully unified, there are counter benefits to the suffering. It doesn't mean you won't suffer, but in between, interspersed with the suffering, even in, you know, later lifetimes, but not the last, you get some relief. The relief is not like, oh gee, this is wonderful. It's more of, this is okay, I can make it, even though it isn't wonderful. And so that's about where most people in an advanced stage of spiritual discipline of their senses end up. Now, most people, when you talk to them about spiritual discipline, they have no clue what you're talking about. So let's define that so that we're clearly got it, and then I'll go a little bit further with this whole idea. If you, as I described earlier, mundane discipline can improve the senses, but only in ways that are selfish for personal self. Because you're not trying to match the frequency and the phase and the dimensionality of God's mind. You're not. You're just trying to get them all to work together, even if they're way off from that, so that they work together better for the selfish purposes you have at hand. What about if you change the motives? And what about if you become relatively unselfish? Then the discipline switches from being a mundane discipline of personal and lower self benefit to higher self benefit and the benefit of souls, including your own. The benefits are not personal, though. And this is where people get upset sometimes, because as they're being taught by, say, a teacher of ageless wisdom about becoming more, we'll say, selfless, more unified in spiritual sense, trying to unify their senses in a spiritually disciplined way. When that starts taking place, and the teacher and or others try to assist in it, the person usually has a battle. The battle goes something like this. Their personality, which is their subconscious, wants to control the outcome of the discipline. Even if they claim and they think that they want to be spiritual, they still want control over the outcome. And the control almost always has some benefit for their lower self. It doesn't have to be 100% benefit. There may be a 10, 20, 30, 40% benefit for others, but usually the majority of the benefit goes for the lower self. Even if it's a minority, we'll get to that in a few minutes, but even if it's a minority, it isn't truly spiritual discipline after a certain point. So what takes place is that people get involved claiming they want to be spiritual disciples. They want to be spiritual. They want to be more like their soul or their life. They say all this. But then they start doing the slightest amount of unifying their senses. And if they don't get something out of it personally, there is some suffering involved in each step of the way, because they're not immediately experiencing any bliss or joy. We just went through that. So they suffer because they have some element of loss of consciousness. Now, why does that happen? Why don't they immediately gain more consciousness as soon as they unify their senses and serve others? Well, there's a significant delay. It could be as much as years of time. When you unify a sense and you actually use it to benefit others, and before you can experience the joy of doing that with the others, and before you get any success with it, you have cost yourself some level of consciousness in the process, because you have used what you had of your own senses for the benefit of others who may have been very selfish and squandering and destructive of them, that may even be connected to you in ways that are destructive to you as well. And that's the suffering. And it also adds to the suffering because you may get angry about it, and because you may get disappointed about it, and because you may get attached to the outcome about it. It's the outcome that's the problem. People want certain outcomes from their spiritual discipline. And as long as they have that as the basis for their spiritual discipline, the problems arise and they may not be successful at it. As a matter of fact, they may be rebel and do the opposite. It's a real big problem. It's not something that is just once in a while. It's like the norm. And this is where it's so hard to get over the hump, where people say, well, this is just too much. I'm suffering. What am I getting for it? I fail more sense of loss of me, and what, nobody cares anyway, and lots of excuses. The answers are the following, and they're chapter something to consider. And that is that there is a real loss of lower self and a real loss of control of the subconscious or personality in the process of spiritual development of unified sense. Real. Now, I know that's tough. That's not like, gee, I just told you something that's going to make your day. Usually when people experience a loss of self and a loss of subconscious parts of themselves, they become both ironic, neurotic, and psychotic. Sometimes personality disorder as well. I mean, they develop all kinds of emotional and mental disorders. That's the normal process. Good news, if you're truly doing it with the help, hopefully, of a group of people and or a teacher, the results can be the following. Instead of just losing your lower self and the personality losing control, you gain equal or more amounts of higher self-development and soul. How does that happen? Well, the others, this is why it's so important to do this with a group of people, the others act as examples and fill in the holes for where you think you're losing something and interact with you in ways that strengthens your higher self and builds that out of the process for the loss of lower self and the personality control or subconscious control. So you give up control. That's a big problem. You give up expected outcomes, maybe even a bigger problem. So the motivation has to change. And instead, you accept co-service with others and the helpful advice of a teacher if one is available. That all becomes the mitigating factor to get you through the hump. What if you say, well, I've heard all that, but I don't want to have no teachers, and I don't want to have any spiritual group, and I don't want to have anything with anybody else. I just want to become a spiritual person myself. I read about people who did it 2,000 years ago. Why can't I do it today? Well, because the bar has been raised so high in order to achieve a unified sense in each lifetime, a certain level of increase, and a thing called initiation, a certain point to get to where your senses are unified in jolts of time, in a very short period of time, by the members of the next kingdom or kingdoms. And since we're not doing this all ourselves, that the problem then becomes the following, that it's too hard to do, that it is no longer what was possible 1,000 or 2,000 years ago to do alone. You can't do without the help of a spiritual group and or a teacher, especially if you can find one, a big teacher. It's just almost impossible. And it may be impossible. And so the results are, unless you do a very strange thing called being a saint, which is really not the kind of thing in the Catholic Church, some other churches they call saints. A saint is someone who becomes so dedicated to a certain kind of light that is needed. They're willing to sacrifice their whole life to that kind of light, and that can get you through it. That's like rare. Not too many people doing that anymore. And that's really, it's more an astral thing, and a very strong will in the astral nature. That couldn't happen much these days. In the past, it was one way that people could do it without spiritual groups and even without spiritual teachers, but it's not like it's any longer. So today we need these things. And the problem is that a lot of people don't get that. They think, oh, well, I'll give it a try, but if I can't, I'll just do it on my own. And of course, it doesn't work. And they waste whole lifetimes. It's such nonsense because it's only going to become more difficult in the next lifetime because the bar is going up and they have all this karma from whatever they fail with in this lifetime. So it doesn't really get better. So those are the reasons that it's recommended that people work with others who are going through the same procedure and work together in the physical life together because their souls are interrelated. And so now you're working together as souls to some extent. It alleviates a good deal of the loss of lower self. There is some. Remember I said there is some initially. And there's also some lack of control loss, or loss of control. It's not just a feeling, it's a real event. So, but again, it can be made up for by others that are co-serving with, and by building the higher self at the same time. And that's the way it's supposed to work. Most people, though, still resist it, and it's a big battle. The first year or two is a nightmare. Absolute nightmare for the spiritual group that's trying to help, for every teacher it's difficult for that teacher, but it's most difficult for the person themselves. They just go through all kinds of problems because it's not them. They don't see it that way. They say, well, why should I do something that makes me feel diminished in my lower self? I'm not as important to me or others. And why should I do something that decreases the amount of control I have? I like having control. I like being in control. Why can't I keep having that? We've gone through it now. You should see that why that doesn't work. And it separates the senses rather than unifies them. And you don't get closer to your soul. All right, let's talk about that. Souls have a unified sense in the realm in which they exist. Where is that? That's the higher mental world. So the soul's senses are unified, or they don't use them. Now you can say, wait a second. Or, it's kind of weird. Souls don't have a great sense in the higher mental world when they begin. Matter of fact, they have almost none. They have to be given their senses by the soul or angel. It's a kind of complicated process, but they won't use them unless they can use them in a unified fashion together. And since they're so limited in what sense they have, because they exist in a little tiny fraction in the higher mental world, they don't have to worry about the broad range of sense that we're trying to unify in three different bodies and three or four, if you consider the mental world, different dimensions of time and space. It's very complicated for us. Or five, I guess, if you consider the etheric and physical senses separate, which they are to some extent. So it's a very complicated thing for a human being. But to a soul, it's not so complicated, and it's actually relatively easy, and souls use, as a matter of choice, their senses only in a unified way. The benefit to the soul is that it lives in light and truth, or it doesn't experience any sense. The distracting benefit from that is that the soul does not have much sense in comparison to what it could have, but because it limits its sense to only that which is of light, it doesn't have the rest. As an example, all the terrible things we're doing in this lifetime, the soul has no sense of directly. It only knows what's missing, but it doesn't know what we really are doing bad. A lot of people might feel better about that. But it doesn't really help the situation. It's just that the soul, in order to maintain what it is, which is this perfect balance between spirit and energy, or near perfect, it has to have its sense relatively unified whenever it's using it, and then choose not to use it otherwise. And so when we're doing bad things, it's not there with us. That's right. Now, it does know the shadow of the bad, and it has that within the permanent atom and our spiritual senses to some extent. It can see what's lacking, but it doesn't have negative memory. And so from that standpoint, when we're reincarnated, we don't necessarily remember our past life, because most of it would have to come through our soul, and the soul is missing the negative stuff, only the stuff that's really positive. And it takes 60% of a time period of positive memory, which for a lot of people is in hours, it's not a few seconds of doing something good. It could be something great for a few seconds, or it could be a normal good thing that might take hours of time. And people aren't that good for a lot of their life. And so the soul, that's the only memory we get of our past. Isn't that strange that that's how it works? So only the great parts of us really remain in a conscious state in the soul, which then can be consciously part of us in our next life. It's a little more complicated than I just described it, but that's kind of the premise of how it works. All right, so looking at it from the standpoint of what we can do then to unify our senses, we could try to live like the soul does, but unfortunately, we live here. And we have bodies in areas the soul has no bodies. We have lower mental, we have astral, we have etheric and physical. Etheric physical is one body, but they act somewhat differently. And so we have those bodies, and that's what we get our senses through. And those bodies are mostly an illusion. So that's where our problem is. We could say we want to live as a soul here, and I talked about that last week, and we could live in the light of the soul, but we still have to use these other bodies that are an illusion, and we have to convert that illusion into light. So it's not illusion, it is illusion. And it is in a place where it is the correct response to becoming a greater part of God. Once we do that, we are truly becoming our souls here, and the soul can exist here as a part of us. I know that confuses some people. Who's us and who's the soul and all that stuff? But if you think about it, and you think about all the things I've said in tonight's show, it may make more sense to you then. All right, so the human being is making the attempt to unify their senses by effectively limiting their lower self and their controlling personality and increasing their higher self, which is actually a part of their soul or angel, and lending that and joining that with their soul. The whole thing is a process of what's called redirection and change and unification of sense. Eventually, this unified senses become part of the soul and soul or angel. Now, that's a whole other kind of can of worms to talk about, and I don't know if we have enough time tonight. But the unification of the sense of the soul or angel is a bit different than the unification with the soul. The soul has a very limited sense. The solar angel has given up its senses for the use of the soul and the soul and for our construction of part of our higher mind. And so in order to regain that sense, the solar angel waits for us to be proactively the creators rather than it taking over and telling us what to do. We've already given a reason why for that, and that's so that we can be the development of our own higher self, not it be the higher self that it just stamps on us. Now, it's a little hard to understand this because we always think of the higher self as part of the soul or soul or angel. But it really is also a developmental part of us, especially if we're unifying our senses. And as they unify, the solar angel develops a new kind of mental, higher self. That kind of new mental higher self becomes directly connected to what will become us as a liberated soul. The way it becomes connected is called the cosmic marriage. It happens in three different ways. It starts with the mental world. And when it's done in the mental world, we become what are called fifth level initiate masters. And our soul is liberated to the fourth Buddhic sub-world. And the solar angel and we become unified in sense together. Now, this is a little hard to understand because the solar angel is an energy being. This is a unique thing. The energy being is being married, connected, for all time with the human being. That doesn't mean a human being's individuality goes away, nor does it mean the solar angel's individuality goes away. It means that their group consciousness grows enormously between them, which is then shared with a whole bunch of other beings in the Buddhic world. A kind of new being, which is why it's another kingdom, is created in this process. That new being has a balanced sense of group consciousness with individual consciousness. The two consciousnesses, for the first time, for either being, is uniquely balanced. The solar angel tends to be a bit imbalanced and more towards the community consciousness side, and the human being seems to be imbalanced more towards the individual consciousness side, as well as the human soul slightly, very slightly. It tries to keep a balance, but it tends to move more in the direction because the human is always constantly pulling it in the direction. When the two join together, the cosmic marriage, which is these days part of the fifth initiation process, the balance, the two beings balance each other. The soul, the human soul, balances the energy soul, and the human being becomes a master of the angel's wisdom or another kind of being, whatever you want to call it. And all of them together become one effective being, at least as they function in the mental and part of, if not all of, the Buddha world. And that's an amazing thing that we're talking about. We're talking about a new kind of being. We're not talking about, well, just kind of like one's a little bit more different than it. No, this is truly a new kind of being. And that's the formation of beings in kingdoms above human. Now, what does it mean to have a balance between individual and group consciousness, and how does it affect unified sense? Well, the best way to understand this is that eventually the senses are, in the atomic world, are given or used by a whole bunch of other beings at a time, and vice versa, and you start becoming able to interact collectively as one being. That's called omnipotence. And omnipotent, the ability to interact or act in a way which is all potency and connected to each other. But when that takes place, it takes place in a way that is co-creating with God, because, of course, this is a state of high enlightenment. And we could say that the best thing to understanding this is that spirit and energy have now evolved together to the point where the beings that they create are truly superhuman beings with capabilities of both omniscience, which that's what took place in the Buddhic realm. That's what the unified sense brought to that part of the equation. And then it became omnipotent in the atomic realm, further enhancing this sense of unification and unification of beingness. Remember, you still exist as an individual, but you do so in sharing your senses, both in terms of omniscience and omnipotence, with other beings. And it starts with, in this particular case that we're describing right now, the solar angel. The solar angel is really the practice run for what eventually becomes all of the beings. So it's sort of like you do it great with that being, and then eventually it expands out to all of the beings. So it's not like the concept of human marriage. Cosmic marriage is cosmic in a sense with all other beings. It starts off with one being, but it grows to all. Something that humans don't do, of course. Okay, so the process is fascinating. Now, people have asked me, well, if that's true, some people I've taught this to, they say, well, what happens if you have a spouse of the opposite sex? And they do. People, these beings do have that. But, see, the spouse has an angel of the opposite. So, you can imagine this. The angels are also spouses. of each other. It's too hard to imagine because we kind of get so messed up with the whole idea of the selfish nature of marriage and sexuality and all kinds of other things that this whole thing supersedes and gets into a much bigger area of thought than what humans tend to understand. Okay, and with that, I don't want to go too deep into that part because that's probably something for another show sometime. But okay, so we've got this amazing unification of sense now taking place beyond the human range into superhuman beings at different levels of superhumanness that eventually is reaching out to back to a liberated monadic state. Now, what's that mean? Well, the unified monadic state is omnipresence. So you have omniscience, omnipotence, and when you reach the monadic state, which is the monadic plane, at the top of the monadic plane, that's where you reach it, you ascend to that point, and the angel with the master has now become a liberated monad and has omnipresence. And they only stay there for a relatively brief life, and then they go on to become omnipresent in the logoic world. And what does that mean? Now they are no longer even, they're liberated monads, but they're becoming demigods. They're becoming God in many different ways, past, present, and future, so that they experience the universe, this universe, in its totality in all ways. Full interaction, full everything. Now, the future from the point that in time, as we think of time, forward from the point of being raised in consciousness to the logoic plane, is one in which these great beings that are liberated monads, and remember, it's still the cosmic marriage of all the things I said earlier, of the solar angels and the masters, and so on. But now they go forward and they have virtual futures going into every potential interaction as it is going to occur through their own creation, intercreation, as though they were God to the end of the universe. It's hard to even, you can't even conceive this because it's too vast of an idea. That's what beings do who leave this universe and grow on to other ones. They become the experience of God within this one till the end of time. They don't experience what God actually is going to experience, because God experiences the virtual future of every being that's going to do that, and eventually all of the beings that actually do that. So it's like a composite factor, but at least they have, as a life, the virtual creation of universe as being God in this universe for their created future, and them being God as all other things will relate to and likely create. Most of what their creation is probably going to be similar to the way things will be, but it will not be the same as God's experience, because it will experience each being, that is say, liberated monad, as it has sensed everything. It's omnipresent everywhere, not just for the present, but omnipresent for all parts of time, past, present, and future. That's a little hard for us to get a handle on, because it's so far beyond the ability for human beings to be conscious of that the words may mean something to us, but we can't really grasp the experience. So the unified sense of a being who's about to leave our universe is a sense of all, in all time, for all things, so that life can be experienced to its maximum level of potential growth, and for that one being at least, and then it will go by choice to another universe of actually more complexity and greater development than the one that we're in, with a different God. So it's amazing that that is the perspective. The unified sense of those beings is so great that they don't just leave the dimension of time and space they exist in, like we're looking at doing, but they leave the entire universe after they have co-created with their God to an amazing level of creation. It's beyond anything we could obviously truly understand. But it gives us some pause to realize that this idea of development of unified sense does not just stay or remain as part of the human experience. It grows and becomes something much more vast, much greater in the higher kingdoms. And there's no knowing how far it goes, because once we're talking about beyond the physical universe, the what is called as the cosmic physical universe, which is all the dimensions of time and space of our universe together. Once you get beyond that, what other universes are like is too far for us. We can't, it doesn't mean much. Or we can use correspondences to this universe and see if we can figure it out, but really, we just don't know. But we do know that it's greater. We do know that consciousness keeps growing. And even gods become greater and greater gods with no end and just keep growing. It's just an amazing thing, an amazing part of the system that is explained through the book, the ontology and cosmology of Angel's Wisdom. And it also explains why the development of unified sense is so critical. Without it, there's just no way to become a soul yourself. And there's no way to experience all the things beyond being a human. So unifying senses is really a key to the developmental process. It isn't the only thing that we need to do when we spiritually discipline ourselves, but it's certainly the very foundation of it. If you don't have it, if you say, well, I want to do everything but that because that's so hard, you won't get anywhere. So in other words, this is the foundation. If you pass it up or you just neglect it, the results will be disastrous. No level of spiritual discipline will ever be permanently attained. And you could throw away many lifetimes doing very little, but nonetheless suffering a great deal in the process, because you're just screwing off and you're not really doing what you're here for. Hopefully this has made a difference. I hope tonight's show has kind of opened people's eyes to this whole thing. A lot of it, I realize, was kind of physics and more science. But that's the way sometimes some people get the message. Not everybody will, but at least I'm hoping some folks will. And the idea here is to realize that there is a system in place for us to move forward and for us to be something much greater than what we are now. And that system was designed by God, when the universe was created. It's been further developed, it's further created, but it was designed to be what it is. Okay, I hope this has been an eye-opener. I hope that has made some sense to everybody. And I'm thinking right now that, in my own experience, unified sense is miraculous, because what level ever you perceive or I perceive that I am at has allowed me to do tonight's show. So, because in order to teach, you need to have a pretty good unified sense, because teaching is also creative, and you can't create new things to improve the consciousness or help improve the consciousness of others if you don't have your senses at least somewhat unified. I know a lot of people tell me they want to be teachers. Well, then recognize you're going to need to unify your senses, and to do so for spiritual reasons, not money reasons, so that it's in accord with the mind of God. Well, we are out of time. Yes, we've reached that point in the show where we're just no more time for me to go on and say anything else. So I hope, again, this has made some difference. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.